Okay, so we are finishing up the first parak in Parshas Yisro, parak Yud Ches, dealing with Yisro himself, and there's one question I'd like to deal with in particular, and then maybe we'll have time for another one as well. But the first one is, and we alluded to this on Rishonim Day when we quoted the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim is one of the primary sources for this, and that is why is it so important to us that this parak be mentioned this juncture? We have the story of Bishalach. Bnei Yisrael is marching on to Kabbalah Satorah. It's marching on to receive the Torah. And then it seems like we have this bit of a timeout when Yisro shows up. This matter is made even more difficult by the fact that it's unclear whether it even happened then, right? That we have talked about at length already about the dispute, that the Gemara raises this dispute about whether the story of Yisro happened before or after Matan Torah, and the discussion does not seem to center in that Gemara on the topic of, well, it's in the Torah before Matan Torah. It's just, okay, maybe it's before, maybe it's after, but if it really took place chronologically after, so what was the necessity to place it before? So Rabbi Baruch Simon and Imri Baruch has several essays actually that seem to allude to this issue. And he quotes in one essay, he quotes three possibilities as to what the approach would be. So the first thing he discusses is it's somewhat of a halachic issue. And that is that the halachos of Geiris, the halachos of conversion in the Gemara and Krisos, is learned out from aspects of Kabbalah Satorah. That Bnei Yisrael had to get their milah beforehand, Bnei Yisrael had to be tovel beforehand. How do you know that they were tovel? Because it says in the next parak that there were korbanos that was offered, and they sprinkled the dam. And where it says, Ein hazah below tefillah, you can't sprinkle the dam without there being tefillah first. So they had that, and then the Torah, getting the Torah itself was Kabbalah Satorah. That was the acceptance of the Torah. We'll get into later on as to what exactly was the role of Kabbalah Satorah at Har Sinai. What did that mean? There are some that suggest that was the example, the Seres and Dibros were the examples of the mitzvos that are given to converts. Converts get, they don't have to be told the entire Torah, they get told some of the Torah. So some suggest that that's what the Seres and Dibros were, that was a sampling of the mitzvos. Some are easy to observe mitzvos, some are more difficult to observe mitzvos. And that's what the Aseres HaDibros actually were. So the entire process of Parshas Yisro perhaps could be seen as one big Geirus process. So who would qualify as a Geir besides Bnei Yisrael, who is, so to speak, converting at this point? Yisro also is the model of conversion. Now, there is an interesting issue with regards to Yisro, and that is that the Gemara tells us in Masechtas Yevamos that you can't convert a person during a time when Bnei Yisrael is experiencing Hatzlacha. The Gemara says, "Ein mekablin geirim limosa Mashiach," that once Mashiach comes, we're going to close the door, we're not going to accept conversions anymore. Similarly to the idea that they didn't accept converts during the period of David, nor during the period of Shlomo. Now, saying that we don't accept converts during the period of Shlomo is a bit of a... That raises a significant issue. Anybody know what that is? There were some prominent people that it seems we'd like to at least assume converted during the time of Shlomo. Did we cover that in our Navi classes or anything here? Okay. We covered it in our Navi class at CVH now it's 6-7 years ago. Those classes took place on Malachim. But we know that Shlomo HaMelech married many, many wives, many of which were not at least born Jewish. Most prominently, the daughter, the princess from Egypt, was one of Shlomo's wives. So how could he marry? That sounds like intermarriage. Doesn't sound like the best thing to do. So the Gemara responds by saying, well, she converted. So we have, of course, wait a second. On one hand, we're talking about the Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro, saying, well, she was a convert, and Shlomo Melech married her. Then, but on the other hand, we have another Gemara that says that Shlomo, during the period of Shlomo, no one was allowed to convert. So something's got to give, right? So how did this become okay? So the approach that is probably most likely is, the Gemara itself asks that question. The Gemara answers that, well, what's the reason that you're not allowed to accept converts during the time of Shlomo? Because people will see it as a step up. We don't want to accept converts when becoming Jewish is considered a step up rather than a step down. I've actually even wondered nowadays, but I don't want to shut down the whole Geirus industry right now. But anyways, the assumption is that's considered that when Geirus is considered a step up, so then we have significant questions about whether they accept the convert. But if a person is already a bas paro, if a person is already a princess, the person already has everything that they need, so then we don't have to be as suspicious that they're marrying, that they're becoming Jewish for ulterior motives. So perhaps that is the that is why the daughter of Paro was able to get in. So the Gemara,
is that Queen of Sheba, or
that's somebody else. The Queen of Sheba, I don't think, yeah, it's a little fuzzy. I don't think the Queen of Sheba just sent people over to Shlomo. Like she didn't my recollection is that she was a somebody from a foreign place, and she sent people, she heard about Shlomo and sent people to see what it's like over there. But not that she converted. That's what I seem to recall. I could be wrong.
The Ark. Isn't there one of the theories that when the Ark left Jerusalem, it went to Sheba? No?
I don't know. In terms of our right, in terms of our Mesorah as to where the Ark is, the Rambam says that the Ark is buried. Right, that's our ongoing assumption. But yeah, there are questions about where it is. I remember watching as like it must have been like 10 at the time. They had some show on TV, "Where's the Ark?" And it traced it to some town in Ethiopia. Right. That actually has a tradition of having the Ark there. They have a priest and a guard around this building. I'm thinking you should be able to get a search warrant. No, you should be able to resolve that mystery.
Indiana Jones
found it as well, right? So that's three opinions. According to National Geographic, it's in Ethiopia. According to the Rambam, it's in the Beis Hamikdash. And according to Indiana Jones, it's in a military warehouse in where? Virginia, Indiana, New Mexico, something like that. Okay. So, anyways, so perhaps the what is being learned from Yisro here, that Yisro converted. How is he able to convert? Isn't B'nai Yisrael at their high point now? Well, Yisro was a priest. Yisro was a Kohen Midyan. So therefore he should be able to be allowed in. That's why Yisro was able to approach. So as we learn this Parsha of Geirus, perhaps learning this Parsha about Yisro indicates another halacha when it comes to Geirus. Now one could perhaps take this a little bit further, as he quotes from the Sefer Iparion from Rosh Shlomo Gansfried. Anybody know who Rosh Shlomo Gansfried was? Rosh Shlomo Gansfried? Shlomo Gansfried was the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You've heard of, come across the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, yeah? So he, in fact, when I one time did Torah tours to Oakland, California, I went to Oakland for a yantif, so there, I actually have a cousin there who is royalty, someone whose last name is Hollander, who lived there for decades, was one of these people who helped Shlomo Carlbach start the House of Love and Prayer, and was a member of the shul in Oakland. So he had already passed away when I went there, but I was there. I was like the royalty of him. So anyways, I met one of his relatives, who I think by marriage not really related to me, and they had a picture of a Rav in their sukkah. So I'm like, why? Who's that? He said, oh, it's just Shlomo Gansfried. So why do you have a picture of all people? Why do you have a picture of him? Oh, because he's related to this. Oh, he's related to me then? All right, cool. So from the Hungarian part of my family. All right, so he then suggests further that perhaps that is also explanation of the first Rashi. Because the first Rashi says, Vayishma Yisro, Yisro heard, what did he hear? What are the two things that Yisro heard? So Rashi says, he heard Kriyas Yamsuf Umelchemes Amalek. He heard about the crossing of the Yamsuf as well as the war with Amalek. Now, there are a couple of other interesting things that have taken place during this period, right? The Mon has fallen. Waters come out of Iraq. This thing called Makas Bechoros. This thing called the rest of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why specifically those two things are things that are mentioned? So he suggests a very interesting point. When we read Melchemes Amalek, what did he hear about Melchemes Amalek? What was your assumption? He heard about Melchemes Amalek. What did he hear? What did he hear?
They attacked.
But they attacked and?
And lost,
right? I mean, Israel won. So he suggests, no, that he has heard that they attacked. This will become significant shortly. He heard that they attacked. So because they had the, so, um, So because the first step was he heard about the Yamsuf, so that's interesting. But he couldn't convert at that point because no one's allowed to join the Jewish people while during the time of when they're at the top of their game. So therefore he waited to hear about the war with Amalek, so now that cooled them off a little bit, even though they won the war. The Medrash discusses how that cooled them off. So therefore, that's why he was able to join at this point. So also a halachic approach to why Yisro is mentioned in the beginning of this parsha. The second approach we mentioned, this we mentioned already, is that from the Orach Chaim. The Orach Chaim says, raises this question, builds up the question. I'm wondering why it would possibly be that Yisro would be mentioned at this point. And as you mentioned last week, the Orach Chaim says, so he says, number one, to teach you that there is wisdom amongst the non-Jews. So we see from Yisro that there is advice, that there is wisdom and advice that could come from Yisro. So often I've heard the structure where it stops there. That, because we have to realize, while we get the Torah, we have to realize that there's chachma out there in the world as well. But he really, the main point is the next point. To teach us that the reason Hashem chose us is not because of our large amount of wisdom, it's not because Jews are smart. Because there's also wisdom amongst non-Jews. That wouldn't be the reason to choose us. Rather, it's because of the kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the love of the Avos. What does it mean that there was a love of the Avos? Rabbi Simon quotes from the Rabbeinu Bechaye, that shlonishtabchu atzadikim ha'navim b'toras kagon Noach v'Avram v'Yakov v'Zulasam b'tari ha'chachma ha'tfun v'adas, that they're not praised for their wisdom. We don't see in the Torah, even though we kind of have this assumption that they were so wise, they knew all of Torah, and they were when the Malachim came to Avram, he's like trying to figure out chakiras as to how I'm supposed to. Right? That's the way that's the Torah Shabbat Peh. But the Torah itself never praises them for their wisdom; it only praises them for their Midos. It only praises them for their kindness. It only praises them for their righteousness. And that perhaps is being learned out from this part as well. That Yisro, we see that there is wisdom, and we're chosen for a different reason. We're chosen because of our Midos, we're chosen because of our commitment, etc. And then there is one other thought that he has here. He quotes from Rabbi Cheskel Eliezer Kahan, who was a Rebbe in Gateshead, England, and he suggests the following. He also pointing to that first Rashi, where Rashi says, Kriyas Yamsuf and Milchemes Amalek. So why did he... what was it about those two things in particular that motivated Yisro to come? So he suggests... that once one hears about Kriyas Yamsuf, so what should one's reaction be to the Jewish people? That they have this really tremendous, amazing God, right? Does that mean that I have to be part of those people? Not necessarily. I mean, Yisro could say, "Well, I'm very comfortable here in Midian. The Jews have this God. I'm very happy that they'll be successful, and I'm okay here, also getting whatever kind of success that I'm going to have." Were the Jews right? Do they have the right religion? So Yisro says, well, they might be right, but I'm also right. I mean, Yisro has worked throughout his whole life in order to develop a hashkafa, he developed like a philosophy, his approach to the world and his approach to God. So Yisro says, look, the Jews have their philosophy, I have my philosophy. There's nothing necessarily that requires me, that calls on me to join the Jewish people. So what is it that then convinced Yisro to join the Jewish people? So perhaps it was the attack of Amalek. What's so special about the attack of Amalek? Well, as he said, that if it's possible, after the Jews crossed the Yamsuf, nobody in their right mind would start with the Jewish people. Who would want to take them on? Who would want to take them on? God just split the sea in order to destroy their enemies. Who in their right mind would take them on? Right? That's what logic would dictate. But when Yisro saw that there was a nation that took him on, that there was an army that said, you know what, we'll take him on, we'll try to fight them, we'll try to destroy them, Yisro realized that just relying on the logic of man is not going to be enough. Saying, as long as we think things through, as long as I think things through, I'll be able to come to the right conclusion eventually, that's not enough. Because presumably Amalek would think things through as well. And they came to the opposite conclusion. How'd they come to the conclusion? No, they were arrogant. They were, we spoke last Musar, during that Musar, on that Perek, the Musar class on that Perek, they had a, They were cynical, and the Koach HaBitul, they said that, oh, whatever happened to them, we're not really impressed by that. Whatever it is, they were able to overcome the obvious evidence that was in front of them. So Yisro said, if a person is able to come to go against obvious evidence such as that when it's in front of them, so what do you see? You see that just relying on one's logic is not enough. And what do you need? You need the Torah. And that's why Yisro came, in order to be present for Kabbalah Satara. Or you would say the opposite, that when he heard that Bnei Yisrael got the Torah too, so that's what convinced him to join, right? One way or the other. But those two examples of Kriyas Yamsuf and the juxtaposition of the attack of Amalek, so that's what then motivated Yisro to realize that it's not just enough to have logic, but you need to have, you need to buy into the Torah as well. Okay, so that is suggestions number one. Is, again, why do we have it in this particular order? Suggestion number one was to teach halachos of geiros, that halachos of conversion, that Yisro had to come at this point to show that. Why was Yisro allowed to join the Jewish people when Bnei Yisrael was riding high? So we really gave two answers to that from Shlomo Gansri. Number one, well, he was a Kohen Midyan himself, so therefore he wasn't necessarily a step up for him in terms of social status. And the second approach is that, well, he waited for Amalek to attack when Bnei Yisrael wasn't at such a high point anymore, and when that took place, so that's when Yisro joined. But either way, it's teaching technical halacha in the laws of Geirus. Approach number two is from the Or HaChaim, that it's coming to tell you that there is wisdom by non-Jews. Don't think that it's just because the non-Jews are smart that you're getting the Torah. Rather, it's because you're Baal Midos, that there's chesed, that there's kindness, there's relationship, etc. That's the approach of the Or HaChaim. And then the third approach, that from Rav Kahan, is that we recognize that Yisro recognized that it's not enough just to use logic and recognize the miracles that are done. One needs a Torah in order to bind them and make sure that one is continuously doing the correct course of action. So that's thoughts number one with regards to the order of the prakim. What is it about Yisro himself? What is the praise that one can have? Yisro is often praised over the course of this parsha. So he has a point here as well. What?
It repeats about 9 or 10 times.
The fact that he's a mechutin, yeah.
Yeah. Does anyone comment on that?
Why? Sure. Yeah. That Rashi himself already had commented on that it was a change of the fact that where he was coming from is Yisro, but here he's more. It gives greater praise to Yisro that where he comes from he's Yisro, and now when he shows up here he's Chotein Moshe. It's a little bit of a downgrade, but yeah, the fact that it's continuously written up that way is certainly peculiar. So what is so special about Yisro? What is interesting about Yisro? So he has also a piece from Simcha Zissel Broida, who was he was the Rosh Yeshiva or the Mashkiach, I forget. I think the Rosh Yeshiva of the Chevron Yeshiva. I think he was the one who built it. Everyone is in Givat Mordechai, the Chevron Yeshiva, that's not in Chevron, but in Givat Mordechai, so that was built under his tenure, I believe. So anyway, so Rav Broida has the following suggestion, that we know that Shemua, that the whole world heard about Kriyas Yamsuf. At least that's the way it's described in Az Yashir itself. Shemua Min Yirgazun, that listened all the nations, that they heard, the earth shook, everybody heard about about Kriyas Yamsuf, and therefore our word had gotten around. So what is so praiseworthy about Yisro? What's so praiseworthy about Yisro? Everybody recognized the greatness of Hashem. What's so praiseworthy about Yisro then? Because he did something about it. That one wasn't just enough to hear about it and say, oh good, shkoyach, that's impressive, and we'll give an applause and then we'll move on with the rest of our life. Yisro took that and said that's inspirational, that's new, and I'm going to go ahead and act upon the teachings that comes about through that lesson, and therefore Yisro picked up and came. So that is also an important lesson as to where that why that should be mentioned in the parsha prior to Kabbalah Satorah, that these things are not necessarily all the events that took place before as well as the events that take place after. It's not enough to just say, oh, those are interesting things, now we're going to go on and live the rest of our lives, but these things have meanings and these things should influence and these things should be a cause for change within our own lives. And then there is one more point that you'd like to point out. And that is this: there is a famous Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Tzaddal and Amud Aleph, where the Gemara comments, "Tan Mishum Rabbi Pius Gnai Hu LeMoshe V'Shishim Ribuyah," that there was a Gnai to Moshe and the 600,000 or the 60,000s. Shelo Amru Baruch At Sheba Yisrov Amar Baruch Hashem, that they don't say Baruch until Yisro came and said, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem Asher Yisrael Eschem Miyad Mitzrayim Miyad Paro. Blessed is Hashem who saved you from Mitzrayim and Miyad Paro, etc. So what is so... that's a bit of an odd statement. First of all, what is it that that Yisro was adding on? And why did Bnei Yisrael miss it? Right? And if you come up, and this is one of those where if you come up with too good of an explanation as to why Bnei Yisrael missed it, then why was it considered a gnai gadol, a big embarrassment to the Jews that they missed it? I mean, the Gemara is clearly giving a rebuke to Bnei Yisrael, but what was the havamina? What was different than why Bnei Yisrael do differently? So beyond that, you just got to ask, really, Bnei Yisrael might not have said those words, Baruch Hashem Yisheri Tzil Haschem, blessed Hashem who saved us. What did Bnei Yisrael do as a response to crossing the Yamsuf? Az Yashir Moshe. Right? So what's the difference? What's Az Yashir Moshe? How is that different than Baruch Hashem Yisheri Tzil Haschem? So the Maharsha and that Gemara in the Sechah Sanhedrin comments that, well, the difference is that when it comes to Baruch Hashem, when it comes to Az Yashir was praise, and it was thanks to Hashem. That was pretty impressive. You know, thank you, Hashem. We needed that. If it wasn't for you, who knows where we'd be right now. And we appreciate it very much. What does Baruch Hashem mean? So Baruch Hashem is a praise. It's not just a praise, but it is going beyond the praise. It is, as I think we mentioned before, the Marshal doesn't use this language, but Baruch is translated, Rav Soloveitchik has a piece where he translates it as increased. Baruch Hashem. When we say Baruch Atah Hashem, may you be increased. How are we increasing Hashem? So whenever we have an apple in front of us and we want to eat an apple, so we say Baruch Atah Hashem, Lakinu Malchum Bereperates. So what does that mean? Increased are you Hashem. So increased are you Hashem in that now not only are you the God that is the judge that is up on high, but you're also the God who clearly created this fruit. I'm increasing the span of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, so to speak. I am raising the profile of Hashem. It's not just this, but you even do this. So perhaps this is what he's driving at, that the Marshal is driving at, that when Bnei Yisrael crossed in, they said, thank you very much, Hashem, for crossing the Yamsuf. It's obvious that you crossed that you did that for us, and we really, really appreciate it. Perhaps when Yisrael comes and says, not only did you do that, but it also came and influenced me. It also demonstrates many other things as well. Not only did you cross, make the Yamsuf cross, but also all the waters in the world, which means, as we explained in the past, which means that everything was recognized as coming from Hashem. So Bnei Yisrael only praised Hashem on the crossing of the Yamsuf. Yisrael was able to take a more expansive view, say not only did you do that, but you did so many other things as well. So Bnei Yisrael, perhaps when you're caught in the moment, you don't necessarily recognize that. You don't recognize anything beyond what is immediately in front of me. So Yisrael came and said, aha, no, it's so much more than just the idea that you were saved from the Egyptians. Hashem showed that He really runs the entire world, which perhaps you don't recognize from being in the moment. He quotes one other further idea here from the Ksav Sofer, and that is that when Rashi commented Vayichad Yisro, what does it mean Vayichad Yisro? That appears Pasuk Tes. Nine Vayichad Yisro Al Kol Tova Asher Asa Hashem LeYisrael. So what did that mean? Yisro rejoiced. That's the way that's translated in the Chumash. But Rashi says the simple explanation is Vayismach, that he was happy. But then he says, another possibility, Nase Bisaru Chadudin Chadudin, that his body became like goosebumps, Miyatzar al Ibu Mitzrayim, as based on the tsar of the loss of the Egyptians. So what is that referring to? So it suggests the Ksav Sofer that Bnei Yisrael was just happy that they were saved. But he also hurt him. You know, Shechav Libo al Mitzrayim. He was upset about the Egyptians. Aval Heven Ki Hashem Lo Yase Ovla B'Mishpat V'Chol Da'Avid L'Tav Avdin. But what yet did Yisro understand? He might have been sad about the Egyptians. He might have had some friends there, at least some Facebook friends that he knew online, at least. But he was sad. But he realized that justice had been carried out. So as the Jews were just happy that they were saved, Yisro recognized that you were saved, and there is reason for them to suffer. And that's the fulfillment of the Gemara, Kishem Hashem Mevarech al Tova, Kach Mevarech al Hara. That just as we give a bracha for the good things that happen, we also give a bracha for the bad things that happen. That we need to have the perspective. We don't necessarily have the perspective of things that are bad, that at the time we say, oh, this was wonderful. It's not wonderful when a person gets sick or a person gets, passes away or all those things. But at least we need to have the perspective that, in theory, it is for the best. We just don't understand it at this point. So that's the additional nekuda. That's the additional point that Yisro was adding, that yes, it's good that you were saved, and perhaps you were upset at the loss of life by the Egyptians, but we recognize that that was also for the good as well. And we recognize justice was served, and therefore that is the cause for a greater Kiddush Hashem. He has one more thought, a similar idea from the Tzlach, the famous Tzlach, which we've quoted before about this, talks about this idea about the giving praise even for the things that are... that don't seem to be for the good, and the Tzlach there kind of steps in and says that we don't necessarily have to say at the time that's when, we just need to have the perspective that really at the end of the day it will be for the best and it will be proven at that point. So Yisro was able to gain that assumption that perhaps Bnei Yisrael didn't necessarily have at that time. All right, maybe we'll stop here and pick up tomorrow Mirza Hashem with Perek Yud Tess.